Before I go any further, I must repeat what I said at the close of last week's broadcast. This is a warning. Listen closely. The government and the news media are going to give massive publicity to the opposition to the draft by hippies, rabble-rousers, left-wingers, and communists. They want the patriotic majority to think that only left-wing radicals or communists oppose the draft, and that therefore, to be patriotic, you should be in favor of it. They used this trick on you during the Vietnam War to keep the majority of you from opposing that vicious slaughter of our finest young men in a fruitless war. They know most of you are patriotic, and you do not want to appear to be on the same side as the anti-Americans and the communists. They will play up patriotism, the welfare of the country, the fear of the communist war machine. Anything and everything will get you to allow them to take your young sons and your young daughters to use them in a war which, like all past wars, benefited not the United States, but our enemies. As a matter of record, the Associated Press reported on February 5, 1980, that Barry Lynn, chairman of the Committee Against Registration and the Draft, was actually called to the White House and given a briefing on Carter's plans to register and then draft women. In other words, the president arranged for the opponents of the draft to be told about it before he told the American public. For what purpose? Well, I believe so they can go out and get their public displays of opposition to the draft started. And the president is in on the deception. Another thing, did you realize we were rushed headlong into four major wars in the last two generations by incidents involving ships? The first one was the Spanish-American War with the sinking of the battleship Maine in Santiago Harbor in Cuba. The second was World War I. Woodrow Wilson declared war when a German submarine sunk the British ship Lusitania, on which there were American citizens as passengers. The November 1973 Reader's Digest carried a long article which showed that the British Navy had deliberately leaked information on the Lusitania to a German spy. They knew it would lead to the attack by the German sub on that ship. The third one was World War II. Japanese carrier planes attacked the U.S. fleet anchored at Pearl Harbor, anchored there with their boilers shut down on orders of President Franklin Roosevelt, sitting ducks, as it were. Then America declared war not just on the Japanese, but on Germany. The fourth one was the Vietnam War. On August 7, 1964, the U.S. Congress was told by President Lyndon Johnson that North Vietnamese naval vessels had fired on U.S. destroyers in Tonkin Bay off North Vietnam. Congress passed the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, which gave Johnson authority to land troops not in North Vietnam, but in South Vietnam. That resolution was used by Johnson and then by Nixon to carry on a destructive war in South Vietnam. It began with a ship incident. And now, a president who has stated he had great admiration for President Wilson and President Roosevelt and President Johnson, the men who tricked us into three of these four wars, has ordered U.S. Navy ships to a place where they are very vulnerable to any sort of an incident, accidental or prearranged. And Americans are being whipped into war hysteria by the news media and by the government. And don't listen to supposedly anti-communist ministers who tell you you must support the draft or the war. These same so-called anti-communist or patriotic ministers told you to support the war in Vietnam, and they pointed to the left-wing hippies who opposed it as a reason why you should support it. Don't let them fool you again. The Indians have a saying, white man fool Indian once, shame on white man. White man fool Indian twice, shame on Indian. Last week I read part of Deuteronomy 20. The entire chapter is on God's laws on warfare. I read through verse 7. I also read Numbers chapter 1, verses 1 through 4, and verse 5 of Deuteronomy 24. However, I will recap just briefly, then I will go on in Deuteronomy 20, as I want to finish this today. Numbers chapter 1, verses 1 through 4 is the original divine draft law. All able-bodied males 20 years old and up, not 17-year-old or 18-year-old or 19-year-olds, but only 20 years old and up are eligible. Also, no females. They are exempt from military service. Then Deuteronomy 20, verses 1 through verse 4, are about chaplains in the military who go with them into battle. Verse 5 through verse 8 are deferments from combat. Now, these are not deferments from training. Every able-bodied male begins military training at age 20. His training is continued as long as he is able, just like we did it in our colonies, and even today in what we call the Guard or the Reserves. However, when it comes to actual combat, there are specific Bible deferments. Verse 5, any man just establishing a home. Verse 6, any man beginning a new business or a new farming venture is excused from combat. Verse 7, any man engaged to be married is excused from combat. The reason given is this, lest he die in battle and another man take her. Then we read verse 5 of Deuteronomy 24, which exempts newly married men from warfare for 1 year. As I mentioned last week, we followed these laws of God in colonial America, but now we are so far away from them that the ministers do not even teach them anymore. Even churchgoers, by and large, do not even know they are in the Holy Bible. Here is Deuteronomy 24 and verse 5 about married men. When a man hath taken a new wife, he shall not go out to war, neither shall he be charged with any business, but he shall be free at home 1 year, and he shall cheer up his wife, which he hath taken. Just think of that, you young married couples. God decrees there shall be no separating of newly married couples for at least 1 year. Actually, that commands a 1 year long honeymoon, no business, no work, no military service for 1 year. Of course, we have violated God's economic and money laws to the extent now that no one has the money to take a year off from work. The bankers have got us all working to pay them usury on several trillion dollars of personal and government debts, and most people couldn't take a month off, to say nothing about a year. Anyway, to send into combat either engaged or newly married men is a violation of God's law just as much as it would be to draft any woman at all into military service. Now, verse 9 and on in Deuteronomy 20 does not have anything to do with the draft, with exemptions, with deferments, or with women in the military, but they are important laws for warfare. And I'll read them so you can see the wisdom of God compared to the foolishness of men. Now to the rest of Deuteronomy 20, and I think I'll read this direct from the printed article, beginning after I quoted Deuteronomy 24, verse 5, where newly married men are deferred for 1 year. Quote, actually, newly married men and the categories of males listed in verses 5 and 6 of Deuteronomy 20 would all make poor soldiers in the stress of battle. Deferring them is not just an act of compassion on God's part for them. It takes out of the unit those whose personal burdens or anxieties would affect their ability to fight. They could be a liability to an army in combat, as many combat veterans of our wars would testify. God's wisdom on this is easily seen to be far above that which now governs our nation. Back to Deuteronomy 20, verse 8. And the officers shall speak further unto the people, and they shall say, What man is there that is fearful and faint-hearted? Let him go and return unto his house, lest his brethren's heart faint as well as his heart. This is most enlightening to those who have been told we cannot defend our nation unless soldiers are forced to fight. Although God's law provides for universal military training of all able-bodied men over 20 years of age, which in itself would eliminate much fear of combat, when the day of actual battle comes, those still afraid are sent home. The reason is simple. Cowardice or panic in battle can easily affect nearby soldiers and cause them to faint also. Any combat experienced soldier can tell you of instances in battle where a few men bugged out and it cost the lives of their comrades and sometimes defeat in battle. This Bible principle is why officers always call for volunteers for patrols or especially hazardous military operations. Success depends on no cowards. Over 3,000 years ago, God told Israel the fearful should not go into battle. Our own experience has proven it to be true. He also told us how to eliminate them. Just ask them. God's law is simple, and it works. Verse 9, And it shall be, when the officers have made an end of speaking unto the people, that they shall make captains of the armies to lead the people. After all the men noble for combat are weeded out and sent home, the remaining men elect, yes, elect their own officers to lead them into battle. Since they were inducted by tribes, in our case by communities and states, and were trained with the same men, the men best qualified to be the leaders in combat situations would be known by the men themselves. They would make a much better choice for a combat officer than would some outsider. It is also true that men will more willingly follow and more quickly obey a man they know and trust than they would a stranger or someone who is incompetent. Much of the hostility between officers and men, so common in our military today, would be eliminated by this Bible method of choosing company-grade combat officers. Our early colonies followed this method of choosing combat officers, as did our whole nation up through the Civil War. This electing of combat officers was phased out of the U.S. Army in the late 1800s, as was the process of sending only volunteers into combat, so that by World War I, our soldiers were not only compelled to go into battle with cowards, they were often led by officers who were chosen not by the men, but because they were the son or the nephew or the friend of someone who wanted to work his way up the command. That God's way is best has been proven in many instances where the appointed officers were killed in combat and the soldiers rallied around a natural leader and went on to literally snatch victory out of the jaws of defeat. God commanded Israel over 3,000 years ago that the soldiers were to choose their own combat officers. It makes good sense to anyone with combat experience. Why do we not listen? Then we have a subtitle, The War Itself. Verse 10 through 15 have to do with foreign war. Verse 10, When thou comest nigh unto a city to fight against it, then proclaim peace unto it, and it shall be, if it make thee answer of peace, and open unto thee, then it shall be that all the people that is found therein shall be tributaries unto thee, and they shall serve thee. Before any hostile act is made against an enemy, there is to be a declaration of war, or in effect, a statement to them, if you do not surrender at once, we will attack you. And then I think because of time I'm going to have to skip a portion of this article on Bible law, which shows how that kind of a declaration often brings immediate peace and no war results. And by the way, the command that the captured enemy shall be tributaries unto thee and they shall serve thee does not mean they would be slaves. It means they would be subservient to the wishes of God's people, possibly being required to pay reparations for war damages. It would also mean they would have to give up all their heathen idols and worship the God of Israel. This is covered in other commandments, and since it is not related directly to warfare, it is not covered in this article. Let's go on, reading again from our printed material. Verse 12, "And if it will make no peace with thee, but will make war against thee, then thou shalt besiege it." Once the declaration of war, which is in effect a call to surrender, has been made to the city, and it does not surrender, then we are free to attack. Verse 13 through 15, "And when the Lord thy God hath delivered it into thine hands, thou shalt smite every male thereof with the edge of the sword. But the women, and the little ones, and the cattle, and all that is in the city, even all the spoil thereof, shalt thou take unto thyself, and thou shalt eat the spoil of thine enemies, which the Lord thy God hath given thee. Thus shalt thou do unto all the cities which are very far off from thee, which are not of the cities of these nations." Then follows the comment. If a city continues to refuse surrender, when captured, every male citizen is to be slain by the captors. At first, this sounds horribly cruel, and God has been called a vicious God by some who do not understand. However, think on this for a moment. If we had done just that in Vietnam, calling in turn upon each city to surrender and accept our occupation, then to slay all males in the cities which refused, it is probable that after this had been carried out once or twice, the rest of the cities in Vietnam would have capitulated upon our demand. Instead of 10 years of war and 2 million casualties, including 250,000 of our own, there would have been a few weeks of war, a few thousand dead, and victory instead of defeat for our side. Some of you have heard of Lieutenant Kelly and the My Lai massacre in Vietnam. Kelly and his patrol were refused entry into a small village and were fired on from the village. The patrol fought their way in, suffering many casualties. Kelly supposedly then ordered his men to kill the villagers. The news media later wrote him up as a murderer, and he was eventually arrested and sentenced to federal prison. Is it possible that some of our internal enemies realize that if our soldiers once began to do such things, the whole of Southeast Asia would have surrendered to us, and the war would have been ended in victory for our side, which they did not want? They therefore made an example of Lieutenant Kelly to keep other soldiers from following his example in combat. And then, because my time is going rapidly, I will skip verse 16 through 18, which were God's instruction as to what they were to do with the Canaanites in ancient Palestine, which is in our printed text, and drop down to verse 19 and 20 and read from the article. Verse 19, "When thou shalt besiege a city a long time in making war against it to take it, thou shalt not destroy the trees thereof by forcing an axe against them, for thou mayest eat of them, and thou shalt not cut them down, for the tree of the field is man's life to employ them in the siege. Only the trees which thou knowest that they be not trees for meat, thou shalt destroy and cut them down, and thou shalt build bulwarks against the city that maketh war with thee until it be subdued. These verses prohibit any so-called scorched earth policy against an enemy. Such things as Sherman's march to the sea during the Civil War, in which he burned buildings and crops, killed cattle, and sawed down orchards, is expressly forbidden in this command. We also violated this law of God in our saturation bombings of Japan and of Germany in World War II, where we destroyed everything under our bombers. In Vietnam, we defoliated their trees and food crops with a powerful poison called Agent Orange, and now we find our own people are suffering disease and birth defects from that poison. Could that be a judgment on us for our violation of God's law? And there is still another page in this printed Bible study. I read only a part of God's laws on military draft and warfare. The entire printed article is available. Write to me today and pray for me and this radio ministry, that we may obey the command to cry aloud, spare not, lift up thy voice like a trumpet, and show my people their transgression, and the house of Jacob their sins. Drafting women into our military service is a sin against God Almighty. Until next week when I return, God willing, this is Pastor Emery saying goodbye. God bless you. Read your Bibles and pray for Christian America.